Welcome back to the Successful Diligence Podcast. I am so grateful that you are back for another episode. Please do take note that all opinions and recommendations and encouragements that are shared on this podcast are my personal opinion or the opinion of the guests that I have on. It is not to be taken as medical or mental health advice. Please do consult your medical professional or your mental health professional with any questions or changes that you would like to make regarding your own personal situation.
Great. Welcome back to the Successful Diligence Podcast. I am so grateful you are back for another episode. I say it every episode. I mean it every episode. I'm so grateful that you're here listening, and I'm so passionate about bringing you incredible conversations with the most amazing people that I am meeting and want to introduce you to. And today is no exception. My special guest is my new bestie. Her name is Kelly Butler, and she is a comeback coach. What does that mean, Michelle? Well, it means that Kelly empowers women to redefine their lives with purpose and joy, which is my word for the year, y'all, after a major medical setback. But my thing is that her principles can work even if you're not going through a major medical setback. Now, Kelly's journey was 18 months and took her from a wheelchair to a walker to a first-time ultra-endurance athlete. Y'all, she traversed Zion National Park hiking 43 miles in 2 days against all odds. I don't know that I could do that, but I'm getting my walk in every day, and you should too. Now, Kelly's personal struggles and lessons have placed her in a unique position to help others realize that although their physical bodies may have changed, who they are on the inside is perfect and just waiting to be expressed. Now, Kelly uses her corporate mentoring background of 20 years, she started when she was two, y'all, to lead women through their discovery of journeying through to rediscovery. Now, she lives in Roswell, Georgia, which means that she's so pleasant and Southern, y'all. And she's the only girl in a house filled with two teenage boys, her husband, and her miniature dachshund, Blue. Her Southern accent gets stronger after a glass of wine, and she loves a good scone. Shout out to the carbs. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be with you today, Michelle.
I'm super pumped for this conversation, y'all, you can tell, because you are my new bestie. I'm so encouraged, inspired by not just your journey, but who you are and what you've done through your journey. So for everyone who's just getting to know you and is like, Michelle, why are you so excited? Give us a little bit about your story, who you are, how you came to where you are, a little bit beyond the bio.
Absolutely. So, you know, I feel like for so many years, I was following this very conservative path. And I grew up with a dad who was a banker and a mom who was really conservative. And so for so many years, I was following along a path that others expected of me. And I got married, and then I went to work for a Fortune 100 company when I was 21. And then I had two boys, and I was just sort of going along in life, assuming that I would retire one day and then I could have some fun. And I feel like there was this midlife crisis. And instead of buying a Ferrari, I just had a breakdown questioning my purpose instead. So it was even more fun than the Ferrari. But I was sitting actually in this exact chair. So it's my leopard print office chair. And my husband, Jeff, was in the room, and I was just bawling, and I was interviewing for so many jobs because I thought if I could just get another job, that'll make me happy. And he said to me, Kelly, you have always had a problem with authority, honey. I don't think that the answer is going to get another job. I think that you need to start your own business. And I just bawled, and I told him how ridiculous he was and that that was never going to happen. And of course he was right. And so that really was the beginning of a seed being formed of starting a side hustle and starting something of my own off to the side that at that point in time had been inspired by a month that I spent walking through the slums in India. And so I have started with that initial business of an online boutique for women in home. And I was progressing with kind of some different experimentations of the side hustle until one day when my life completely changed and my body was not my own any longer. And on that day is when, you know, these events really led me in a very unexpected direction.
Wow. Now just that, there's so much to unpack. And of course, we're going to get into that life-changing experience, but talk to me first about the India experience. What was that? What brought you to India? What was the inspiration for the business? What was the business? And what was that like? Because India is a very different culture than America.
It is. And so through my company at the time that I know you mentioned in the intro, I was with them for 20 years, and there was a program called the Corporate Service Corps, and it was initiated in the early 2000s, and I wanted to join it as soon as I found out about it. But so what it is, it's a program where from all over the world, the employees of the company would apply, and then a very small group, maybe less than 10% of applicants would be chosen. And then you would be placed in a small group and sent into a developing country where you would work pro bono or for free in a consulting capacity for a nonprofit organization there. And it was an opportunity to work with other people from other cultures and to completely be dropped into a different zone that was completely different from what you were used to, and an opportunity to just use skills that maybe you didn't know you had by, you know, placing them in a totally new work environment. And so as my boys were young and growing up, this role would require me to spend a month away from home. And that's a long time when you've got little boys and, you know, the husband's like holding down the fort and, you know, we're both working full time and juggling a lot. And so but finally I decided that it was time to apply. My husband said, you know what? They're at the age where we can swing this. So I applied, and honestly, a year went by. I forgot about it. I assumed that I had not been chosen, and my phone rang about 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. And I was sitting here at my desk and I got the call saying, hey, we'd like to deploy you to a small team in Mumbai, and we're just going to need to know by Monday morning if you're going to be able to do this. And so I thought that they had the wrong person, and I made sure, you know, asked a few times, made sure that this was the right call. And my husband was like a deer in headlights, but he knew how badly I wanted it for so many reasons. And it was just an opportunity to push myself, challenge myself, and just be dropped in the deep end. I really wanted to be dropped into the deep end of the pool. And so that started off, you know, a chain of training and preparations to spend a month in Mumbai working with a nonprofit there called Pratham. And they are focused on every child learning and doing well, even if children aren't learning as well in the public school system. And they are focused on providing amazing education, even in the very poorest communities. And so I was dropped into the deep end, into the slums, and spent a month there helping Pratham create new programs for parents and children.
That is wonderful. And you know what strikes me about that experience, and I'm so glad that you shared that, because it's almost like it was, in the church world, we call it prophetic. It was almost like speaking to the future and preparing you for skill sets and being uncomfortable and having to push hard, being dropped into a situation that you did not prepare for, had no knowledge of prior in what came about in your life. And so I love that, because I'm a big believer that whatever presents itself in our lives is supposed to be there for a reason and a purpose. So talk to me about the journey where your body became no longer your own, and what a powerful statement that is. And then how you got your body back is what we're going to chat about too.
Yes, absolutely. And So this was, so travel back in time with me to 2020. This was at the very beginning of the pandemic. So we were seeing headlines come out about Italy being a hotbed of COVID activity. And there was a lot of fear and uncertainty circulating at that time in March of 2020. And the day that our schools announced that they were closing, I started to feel sick. And so I had contracted a virus. At that time, I didn't know what it was. Fever, chills, all sorts of different symptoms. And I was just having these intense body aches, and but I couldn't get a COVID test. It was so early, there weren't even really tests available. And so as I worked through that illness, I wound up in the ER with shortness of breath and other problems. And the doctor said, look, I think you've got COVID, but we're not able to test you. And so I went home to recover. And I thought, okay, I'm turning the corner. Fever finally stopped. And you know, said, okay, I'm on the road to recovery. But the strangest thing started happening is that I was feeling, the best way I can describe it is a profound weakness that was starting in my ankles and moving up my legs. And then, Michelle, I started to notice, like, I was picking up a glass of water and dropping it because I was not able to grasp the cup. And over the course of a couple of weeks, it was getting worse and worse. I was needing to use the furniture, hold on to the furniture to be able to move around the room. And finally, one day it got to where I was not able to stand up and I was not able to walk. And by the time my husband got me into the car to take me to the hospital, I was having trouble chewing and speaking, basically because that weakness was coming all the way up and traveling upward through my body. And
oh my goodness. And hold on, because that right there, in terms of how fast it was happening, it sounds like, and that it was happening, I mean, that's really, really scary. How were you dealing with the emotional impact of that? Because you don't know what's going on yet. And you're losing function of your body that, I mean, you're an adult, you're not like a toddler, right? You know, so it's, we've already mastered that, you know, way seasons ago. I mean, that's really scary though. How did you handle the emotional impact of that?
It's a great question. And let me tell you, it was denial. At that point in time, it was pure denial. And I had an appointment coming up with a neurologist because I've been scared about this weakness, but I couldn't wait till the appointment. I mean, it was progressing so quickly that I was not able to wait any longer. And, but the morning of, I was actually on a conference call. I was still working. And so I was not ready mentally to go there and to really do too much research about it. And I wasn't ready to accept the level of the loss of control that I was experiencing. And so honestly, I wasn't dealing with it very well at that time. And
which is so common. That is, thank you for being transparent about that, because that's such a common response that we have when something uncomfortable, new, or really scary comes about. My mother was the queen of that. and so it's very normal, very typical response, not always the most effective in terms of moving through it, but very, very understandable. And so your husband brings you to the hospital, and what happens next?
So, you know, the real hard part about it was traumatic when he had to drop me off, because remember, this is at the height of the pandemic. And so there were no one was allowed to be with me. And so here I've lost control of my body. I'm in a wheelchair and I'm out in the waiting room, waiting to be called. And then once I finally do, they tell me I'm going to have a spinal tap. I'm going to have to spend hours inside of the MRI machine. And it was very scary. It was terrifying. And I was laying in the bed and I was not able to get the attention of the nurses. I remember how panicked I felt lying in the bed, because I was not able to roll over and press a button to get help. And I was not able to even lift. I could lift my hands up maybe about an inch off the bed, but I had lost the ability to move, and my mind was fully functioning and expecting my brain to send those signals and for your body to move as you will it to every other day. And that wasn't happening. And so they were taking me through this battery of tests and they said, you know, Kelly, we think you have Guillain-Barré syndrome. And that sounded really funny to me, French name, I'd never heard of it. And so it's a debilitating neurological condition. And what happens is in the body, when you tell your body to make a movement, your brain is sending a signal out to your muscles. And it happens so quickly. Obviously, we don't think about it, something we take for granted. But in my body, there had been damage to my nerves. My body thought it was still fighting that virus. The virus was gone. So it was actually attacking my own nerves. And the coating had been damaged so that the signal could not get from my brain to my muscles for my body to actually move. And so it was a form of paralysis. And
wow.
Yeah.
Hold on. I'm responding and I'm marinating because that is so powerful of an experience. And like your life changes, you're not the same. And going through it alone during the height of this pandemic where there's already chaos and anxiety in the world. So the energy of life is just there. And then going through this, I cannot imagine what that was like for you. Was there anything grounding, like a faith or a, you know, gratitude practice or anything besides the, oh my gosh, what is happening to me sort of thing? Like, how did you manage that?
Yes. So after the denial was wearing off and I had at least an initial, what they thought was going to be the diagnosis, I knew I was going to be there for about 5 or 6 days in the hospital. And they were telling me it was going to take up to 3 years for me to recover. And it was very difficult to take in, especially as I was lying there in that moment. But I knew that I had choices. We always have choices no matter what the situation. And so for me, I kept repeating to myself, you are by yourself, but you are not alone. And there is such a tremendous difference between the two. Physically, yes, I was by myself, but I was not alone in my life. And it was a time for me to sit back and be grateful for the support and the love that I had, even though those people weren't physically in the room with me.
That is, that is so powerful. Oh my gosh, because you were literally forced to slow down, right? Refocus, reprioritize, and to be able to implement the superpower of choice, which listeners, you know, I talk about all the time, but this is like an extreme situation where you would think you can't move your body. You can't even turn over to hit a button and you're by yourself and yet you still have a choice. That is so powerful. Oh, that is so powerful. And then to recognize the truth, and this is the truth, you may be by yourself, but you are never alone. That is so powerfully encouraging. Oh, I'm so glad you shared that. I just wanted to highlight that if you all are taking notes, listeners, which I know you do, that is a nugget that can get you through the darkest of times. And Kelly is a living witness to that. And it's so powerful. Oh, thank you for sharing that. Okay. Oh, I totally interrupted your flow, but tell us how you started the recovery process. What was that like?
Yeah. So I had this I had this in phases because I was trying to handle it one thing at a time, because when somebody tells you, we think it might be 3 years until you can fully recover, it is so difficult to wrap your brain around that type of time frame. And so I tried to break it up into small phases that seemed more manageable to me. And so the first phase was just getting through the hospital stay. It was, as I say, it was a very lonely time, but how I made it through that part of it is I said to myself, I'm going to be the most pleasant and wonderful patient that these nurses and doctors have ever seen, because I will make friends. If I have to be here for 6 days and, you know, they're going to take care of me and I can't have any of my loved ones here, I'm going to create relationships with the people that are physically here with me. And
I love that. Oh, I love that.
So I tried to get a sense of humor. I tried to, you know, make friends with them. And it got to where they could place my phone on the tray right in front of the bed. And so I was at least able to pick up my hand slowly and press the button on the phone. And so when I felt up to it, when I had the physical stamina, I was calling people. I was calling people and I said, I'm going to connect with the people that I love and I'm going to strike up conversations. And I said, I'm not going to turn on the TV. I'm not going to even touch that remote in this room. I'm going to connect with humans, either that are with me or that are my friends. And I also turned to listen to classical music and also some meditations when I was in the hospital. And I carried that forth actually through a lot of stressful doctor's appointments and MRIs and other things that were to come in my future to help settle anxiety.
Side note, classical music has been scientifically proven to improve brain health as well, especially in babies. You can, it helps to, in terms of the synapses and those neural pathways that we talk about, listeners. So classical music, you may not be a fan, but it's incredibly powerful for brain function as well as reducing anxiety, as Kelly mentioned. So I just wanted to highlight that too. You're bringing out so many good things. Oh my gosh, Kelly, I'm so glad you're on the show. Okay, yay. Keep going.
Me too. And so I got through the hospital stay, but I was at that point on a walker. And when I say that I was moving at a snail's pace, I'm not being dramatic. I mean, it literally, I felt like I'd been placed into the body of a 95-year-old woman. And so one of the techniques that I used during that time was, as I mentioned, humor. And I also had to find a way to detach who I am on the inside with what was happening to me physically, because I decided that I was not going to be defined by this episode. And so I said, you know what, this is my alter ego, my 95-year-old alter ego. And I named her Mildred.
Perfect name. And that is powerful. Redefinition. I am not what I am experiencing. Oh my gosh. Okay. Keep going.
That's right. Because I knew that I did not want to adopt the identity of being a sick person. Mm. And so I was very careful with my words. I would say to myself, I'm a healthy person experiencing an illness. And so Mildred became my sense of humor, because instead of doing all the wonderful things in my life, working out, traveling, being with my family, I was doing things like having my mom dress and undress me and needing to sit down on a potty chair inside of the shower and doing physical therapy where I was literally learning how to wiggle my toes. These were the things that Mildred was doing. And so it became something for me to laugh at, because it wasn't me. It was a temporary visit from Mildred. And that's how I chose to see that. And I couldn't go home because Mildred was not able to lift her foot to one step. And I have 17 stairs at home that lead up to my bathroom where I would, of course, need to bathe. And so I was nowhere near ready for that. So I needed to go live with my mom in her one-story house for almost a month. And, you know, we called it was the old folks home. We, you know, Mildred out there watching the birds and, you know, it's taking 10 naps a day. It was all so tiring. And so, we called it the old folks home with Mildred. And, so I try to maintain that humor and my family could come and visit me. But unfortunately that month after going back to her house, Michelle, I was, my body's natural defenses were extremely low. And so I was running close to 30 days of fever. And I mean, racking, shivering, very, very sick. And it was just illness after illness, even though I was basically locked down at her house and hardly seeing anyone and wearing a mask. And so my body was just having a very, very hard time regulating. And so as I'm trying to come back from Guillain-Barré syndrome and gradually build up my energy, my stamina, and starting with in-home physical therapy, I was also contending with a number of these very frustrating illnesses too.
That is so fascinating to me. And, you know, I love the Mildred reframe. But what's interesting is it's almost like you had to journey back to being like reborn almost, right? And not only learning how to regulate your body and move all the things, but also redefining who you are. Because this, I'm sure, changed who you are at such a deep level. And you came out victorious. And I'm curious, you know, and because you said it really fast, that, you know, you came out of the hospital and you were on a walker and you're walking like a 95-year-old person. Were you aware of the tremendous victory that that was in the moment? And did you celebrate that? Or was it sort of just like the pushing through?
It was in those early days, Michelle, it was hard for me to see that as a victory. I was still reeling. I was just reeling from that prognosis of this time that it was going to take to recover. And I think my outlook was a little bit brighter as I was able to go to my mom's house and be physically around the people that I loved. And I think that changed it. It helped to elevate my mood and my outlook faster than I had been when I was on my own. But I was celebrating those small wins of being able to stand up for 3 seconds on my own, being able to stay awake for more than an hour, being able to finally, when that happened, pick up a book and read it, or be able to write again. But the thing about me is that I realized very quickly when I got out of the hospital that those small wins were needed and they were realistic, but that they weren't going to be enough to motivate me. And so 2 days out of the hospital, I had an acquaintance, a friend of mine, share on Facebook, and she posted on my page and she said, "Hey, have you ever heard of Project Athena?" She said, "This is an amazing organization. Think you ought to have a look at it." And so I went out there and I pulled up the webpage, and it was this incredible nonprofit that is focused on helping survivors live their adventurous dreams. And I started reading more about it, and it was about thrivers and survivors of all sorts of different huge medical setbacks that decide that they're going to plan a huge adventure for themselves, push themselves, and to go on an adventurous journey with other survivors together and celebrate their comeback. And so I decided 2 days out of the hospital that I was going to hike Zion National Park the following year, even though my doctors are telling me it's going to take you 3 years to get back to where you were. And this was ridiculous. It was a ridiculous goal. I mean, I have never been an athlete. I actually faked sick during PE in the second grade. No lie. The principal was calling home and saying, "Kelly has a headache every day at the same time." My mom was taking me to the doctor. They're drawing blood. No, it was during PE because I didn't want to sweat. And also I didn't want to be the center of attention during all the sports. Hated it. Here's someone who sleeps through her workouts, who is a little bit overweight and have been a little bit overweight through most of my adult life. I mean, this was not like, "Oh, this, you were a big athlete prior to being sick, so we're just gonna, you know, go do that again." No. And so my family, they were just humoring me. They were like, "Okay, honey, like whatever you say, that's okay.
All whatever right. keeps you going forward."
You set that goal to hike an ultra marathon. No problem. You know? And my doctors really thought that it was crazy. But to answer your question, I knew that I need to celebrate those wins, but I knew that that also wasn't enough to fully inspire me the way that I wanted to feel a burning inspiration to fully recover and come back stronger.
You needed that ridiculous goal to be the seed. But what's fascinating is that you actually achieved the ridiculous goal, which is incredible. How long was it before, from that point where the seed was planted, until you actually achieved that ridiculous goal?
It was right around 18 months, a little bit shy of 18 months. And
so take that, doctors who said 3 years, 18 months. Wow.
Yes. Yes. And so I'll tell you though, that I think it's something so important that for everyone listening, it's so important, because if you're setting the right kind of goal, it means that it's something you don't know how to do and you've never done before. The whole object of it is the growth and the person that you're growing into becoming. And Michelle, as I was preparing for our discussion today, I saw a post that you made on Instagram from your book. And so I know that we share that belief so strongly that that's true, but I wasn't able to hold a coffee cup with two hands. I could not stand on my own. I could not walk. I could barely move my body. And so there was zero evidence pointing to me being able to achieve that. And so I just hope that that provides some level of inspiration with whatever your Zion moment is.
I love that. And what is faith? It is the evidence of something you cannot see or touch, which is just, so I'm going to adopt this ridiculous goal mantra because I love that, because it infuses some of the strategies that you already talked about, the humor, right? So my ridiculous goal is something you cannot do, is what you said. And it's so far out there that it's ridiculous. And yet you can still achieve it if you choose to do the daily small things and celebrate those daily victories and have the faith, the evidence of what you cannot see, you know it, you feel it. And then you walk towards it. And that also, I think, is a rewiring of our brain, which then motivates your physical body and also your spiritual self, because where the mind goes, the body follows. And so I just love, love, love that. So what was it like when you finished those 43 miles, which, by the way, kudos to you, because that's a lot of miles in 2 days. So what was that moment for you? Like, bring us to that moment.
Yeah, there was so much leading up to it, you know, so much growth, so many lessons, and also more setbacks. I mean, if I could back up for just a moment of, you know, before I reached Zion, I lost my job. It wasn't just a job. It was a career that I had of 20 years, and I was let go from my job before I was fully recovered. And I am the primary breadwinner in my family. I also suffered a relapse. So in September of 2020, after I had learned to walk, I was up to walking about 2 miles in the neighborhood, and I just felt like I was on top of the world, and it came back, and I was on a walker again. And I'll never forget that moment of going back into physical therapy after that second week-long hospitalization and bawling, crying in the therapy room. It was a little circle, kind of a mini track that goes around the room. And I had felt so victorious making progress, walking around that little circle. And there I was again on a walker, laboring, having to learn how to walk for the second time in the year. And I got the call about a week after that relapse that I'd been accepted as an Athena into the program. And I remember saying, like, I don't know how I'm going to do it. I don't know how I'm going to get to Zion. But I never lost faith in it. And so I did learn how to walk again the second time. And I was finally, after 8 months, able to drive again and able to have access to more independence. And I found a training buddy. And so for 5 months, we had a grueling training program, which included culminating up to a 3-hour stair climb in the Georgia heat.
Oh my goodness.
And so we like climbing stairs for 3 hours is just, it's no joke. And
listen, climbing stairs for 5 minutes is no joke. So kudos for the 3 hours. My goodness.
Yeah, it was incredible. You know, and up to 20 hours a week we were training. So it really was like having a second job. And so it took really a lot of determination and focus. But as it got, you know, towards Zion kind of coming onto the horizon, I had made myself a promise long ago that day that I decided to do Zion. I decided that I was going to use it as an extreme measure of gratitude. And so, although I couldn't write at that time, I thought to myself, I'm going to dedicate every mile to somebody who has uplifted me on this journey. And I think part of what helped me to actually reach the goal itself was knowing that I had now made it much bigger than me. It was so much bigger than just me.
Oh, that's beautiful. And that's so key when we think about those ridiculous goals, is to make it beyond yourself, right? The meaning of it. So it's for you, it's your ridiculous goal, but the meaning of it that you assign is bigger than yourself. And that helps to increase and reinforce that motivation. I love that. Oh my goodness. You have had so, you know, I think about, there's this meme or this picture that says, you know, our version of success, and it's a straight line up to the top. And then it says the reality, and there's all these squiggly lines, and you go down into the, you know, the pit of water, and you have to climb back up, and, you know, it's twists and turns, and it's messy. And your story and your journey is so beautiful of a picture of that reality of journey, where your identity has to be redefined. You have extreme joy and victory, and then you're like, boop, you're back, you know, backtrack. And yet you reinforce what you have already conquered because of core principles and values and the superpower of choice and the intentional definition of meaning to your experience. And I just, it's so inspiring and so encouraging. And I feel like we could talk like forever, really. But if you were to like encourage the audience, and I've taken notes, I have like so many things that I've extracted, and audience, I know you have too, just in terms of the wisdom nuggets that came out. And if you missed any, rewind and listen again, because they're there. It's amazing. The choices, the phases, intention, the language piece. Oh my gosh, how we talk about our situations and ourselves is so important. But if you had to really highlight something that you wanted the audience to really remember, to really highlight about your message, what would that be?
Yes. So it was actually this wonderful, perfect segue, Michelle, that you just talked about, which, you know, just shows, I think we're vibrationally, you know, very much on the same wavelength, but you talked about that imperfect journey. And so I want to, because our mind really thinks in pictures, I want to leave you guys with a mental picture, and it's a stock market graph. So, you know, the kind I'm talking about, right? Where you might
love the stock market. Yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're looking at the ups and the downs, and looking at the history of what that stock has been doing. And you're going to see that it's a million squiggly lines. It's the ups, it's the downs, it's the dips. But, you know, as an investor, what you're looking for is overall, it's a positive trajectory. And so when you are going after a goal that is so much bigger than you, that ridiculous goal, you have got to realize that it is not going to be beautiful and pretty. You will have the dips, but it's up to you to assign meaning to what those dips mean. Does it mean that you're done? Does it mean that you can't do it? Or does it mean that it's just a temporary setback that is not defining you and your journey? And so when you assign a meaning to give yourself grace, you will find that you can keep going and not give up. Because if I would have stopped at the first, the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth dip, I would have never crossed the finish line with Zion. I would have never made incredible friendships and actually an experience that changed the course of my life and my trajectory and my career. So don't stop, even though you're going through these dips, and just remember that your journey is much like the stock market, and give yourself the grace and keep going.
Oh, I love that. And just remember, even with the crash of 29, the stock market rebounded and came back. It takes time. But one other thing that I really want to highlight, audience, is that Kelly mentioned throughout this entire conversation, the power of community. First with yourself, because you may be by yourself, but you're not alone. And then also reaching out to others to involve them in your experience. And the power of community, Kelly, we didn't go into it, but she mentioned how powerful it was to help her achieve that ridiculous goal. And so, oh, Kelly, thank you for sharing. We didn't have time to go into it, but tell us a little bit about what you do, because your entire career has changed and you're thriving and you're helping so many people and impacting for good. So tell us a little bit about what you do and where people can find you if they want more, and how they can learn about you and all the things.
Absolutely. So thank you, Michelle. I do love community. I love to have these conversations. I love to talk forever. And so I would love to connect with you. And so you can find me out on Instagram at Your Comeback Coach. And the difference in my career is that I have become a comeback coach. And I think that my experience has placed me in a position, a very unique position, to help others create a life of joy and purpose after their medical setback, whether it's a one-time setback like I had, or maybe they're working through a very difficult chronic illness. And I help them to redefine themselves, not to get back to what they were before, but to completely redefine themselves from the point at which they are now. And so my business is the Comeback Collective. And if you follow me there on Instagram, go into my bio. You can follow a link to watch my story. You can also follow a link to join my free Facebook group, which is called the Comeback Thrivers. So definitely recommend this to a friend who has been going through a setback. Message me if something here resonated or if you have a question for me. I would absolutely love to connect.
And of course, listeners, as you know, I hook you up. All the links are in the show notes, so you can click and go. And I have a chronic condition, so I think I'm going to join your free Facebook group since I qualify as the avatar, as the business world says. Oh, I love it. Kelly, there's so much depth and so much more, but I just so appreciate the transparency. And I just, like I said, you're my new bestie. So I'm just so glad you could come on the show and I could introduce you to my audience. And listeners, I really encourage you to check out her Instagram, check out her story. It's so powerful. If you qualify, meaning that you want a redefinition of meaning about who you are and your identity, if you've had any kind of medical setback or even chronic condition, or, you know, I bet you if you talk to Kelly in the DMs, she might just hook you up, even if you don't have a medical issue. But she will be able to serve you because she's got that kind of heart and she's just such a wonderful human. So Kelly, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm so glad that we were able to bring you on and introduce you to everybody.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Your energy is so inspiring, so uplifting. And I know that it's why your listeners keep coming back for more of the way that you can genuinely connect with others. And I'm so grateful for you inviting me here today.
Oh, thank you for your kind words. I accept everyone. I have the best audience ever. Listeners, you know, I love you so much because you are just the bomb diggity bomb. And as I always encourage you, keep walking. Always, always keep walking. I don't care what it looks like. I don't care what you feel like. Keep showing up in life. Keep walking. Because if you continue to walk, and I'm a witness, Kelly is a witness, if you continue to walk, even if your body's not letting you walk, in your mind, you're walking, keep walking, because if you continue to walk, you will reach your destiny. You will reach your destination. And on the journey, I encourage you to always, always choose gratitude. Choose the meaning of what you are experiencing, and it will change who you are. Oh, until next time, listeners, choose gratitude.
As you know, every single episode, I end with my encouragement for you to choose gratitude on your journey as you keep walking. But have you ever asked yourself, that's great, Michelle, but how do I do that? How do I implement gratitude? How do I choose gratitude? It's not easy living this life. And sometimes I don't feel very grateful. How do I incorporate gratitude into my daily life? Well, I've got you covered. Just for you, I have a Gateway to Gratitude mini course in the Successful Diligence School. There is a link in the show notes, as well as a coupon code just for podcast listeners, where you get 50% off. So head to the link in the show notes or successfuldiligence.com and click the school tab on the website. It will take you to the school and you can see the Gateway to Gratitude course, which walks you through how to implement gratitude into your daily life. Trust me, gratitude and gratefulness, when implemented effectively, will change your life.